noticed, is it Ms. Stubbs? Did I pronounce that correctly? Stubbe, we'll make sure that's in the record. Thank you. Our last case this morning is 823-1118, the State of Minnesota versus Kenneth Bernard Lax. As all parties are aware, appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument. And finally, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever you are ready, just approach the microphone, adjust the podium to your level, and feel free to, or please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel for the state. My name is Joseph G. Vaccaro. That's last name is spelled V as in Victor, A-C-C-A-R-O. I'm arguing in place of Mr. Leiderman, who will remain the attorney of record on this appeal. Your Honors, this case presents a question, obviously, of whether or not Judge Olmstead abused her discretion in sentencing Mr. Lax to an executed prison term and denying his motion for a dispositional departure. I'm new to the case. I didn't see it until these briefing materials crossed my desk, and what struck me was the number of factors in favor of a dispositional departure at play here. We have Mr. Lax, who essentially has no felony criminal record for over a decade, no criminal record for over a decade even, throws one punch and essentially finds himself facing a charge of first-degree assault based on the soft skull rule. He immediately takes responsibility for his actions, engages in all sorts of rehabilitative work, submits to a psychological exam that tells the court that this is very unlikely to happen again, and that the behavior that Judge Olmstead relies on to sentence him to prison is more or less emblematic of who Mr. Lax was in his youth, not who he's become as an adult. Now, I think abuse of discretion in these situations is a bit of a squishy standard, and it's courts and lawyers have always struggled as to how to explain it. But when I look at the sentencing guidelines, what I see is the sentencing guidelines clearly command that the court is to impose the least restrictive sentence necessary to ensure public safety and ensure that crime is deterred. The question before us then is it really necessary to sentence someone in Mr. Lax's position to a period of incarceration for 76 months? When we look at him as a person, we see that the scientific evidence before the court is that he's very unlikely to reoffend. We look at the actions that were taken, and they were taken, I think he would agree, he did agree because he pleaded guilty, out of a mistaken belief that he was acting in defense of another. And indeed, had the victim not fallen the way he did, Mr. Lax wouldn't have even needed to move the court for a departure of any sort. I didn't see anything in the record that indicated that but for the way the victim hit his head, that this would be anything other than a misdemeanor assault. And so the question is then, what is it about these old felony convictions that could possibly outweigh who Mr. Lax has become and who he is based on the PSI and the scientific evidence before the court? And Judge Olmstead doesn't really elaborate on that. She just seems to say that there's been this period of crime, a crime spree almost, that's been occurring from the late 90s onward, but doesn't address the fact that there's a marked break in Mr. Lax's criminal activity up until the present offense, which again is not one that seems to be born out of any antisocial inclinations, any inability to control anger. It really does seem to be a mistake about what was occurring, and one punch thrown where someone fell and had injuries and sustained injuries in that fall.
So if you would, you are talking about the facts of the offense, and the district court certainly looked at the facts of the offense in this case, because the district court did grant a durational departure, right?
I agree, and I think
you probably know where I'm headed.
Yeah.
So it's my understanding that what you are now appealing is the district court's decision to deny a dispositional departure, which turns on offender, or in this case, Mr. Lax's character.
I agree with that.
I guess I'm struggling with the emphasis in your argument on the facts of the offense, which, of course, I mean, a terrible tragedy. And as you said, and the district court did talk about that at great length.
Yes, it did.
At the sentencing hearing. You go right ahead with your argument. I'm just would appreciate it if you'd focus on what I believe the sentencing guidelines suggest the district court should have focused on in deciding whether to grant a dispositional departure.
Certainly. And what I'm saying is I think the best way we can know individuals is by their acts. People can lie with their words, they can't lie with their deeds. And if there was something about Mr. Lax that indicated that he was essentially just going to be on a crime spree, that the behavior in the 90s was still reflective of who he was in the 2000s, I don't think we would be looking at an assault with these sort of facts going on. That he is clearly not an aggressive person, that he's someone who's looking out for others, that he's someone who takes responsibility for what he's done, that he's honest about what's going on. And all of those things are offender-specific criteria that I think do weigh well in the idea that he is particularly amenable to probation. And I talk about the unique nature of the assault because I think that when we look at the average assault one, we're talking about someone who has, you know, again, we're blending the two, I admit, but we're not talking about someone who set off to commit a particularly vicious beating, that can't handle problems through, that is essentially resorting to self-help, that can't handle their own problems through the appropriate legal channels, that sort of thing. That's where I'm going with that. And so I think that Judge Olmstead did abuse her discretion because when we add all this up and we look at who Mr. Lax was and is, that every indication was in the PSI and in the evaluations that were conducted of him, that incarceration is not needed to ensure that he will remain law-abiding and that he will no longer pose a threat to public safety. If the court has no more questions, I believe I've made my point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Vaccaro. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Peter Marker for the state. Your Honors, I think I would just start by saying that Judge Olmstead, I think, acknowledged that this is a very sad case from multiple perspectives without question. The guidelines sentence for appellant's first-degree assault conviction was 94 to 132 months. It was a range. The state requested a middle-of-the-box sentence of 110 months. Judge Olmstead gave careful consideration to appellant's request for departures, both dispositional and durational, and ended up sentencing him to a 75-month term, a 19-month reduction off the bottom of the box from the presumptive sentence, but not a dispositional departure. Facts or characteristics that suggest that an offender is amenable to probation may justify a downward dispositional departure to probation. But on this point, the law is crystal clear from both this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court. Amenability to probation does not require a dispositional departure. This court and the Minnesota Supreme Court have repeatedly said that the trial court has very broad discretion. That discretion was exercised carefully here by the judge. She considered appellant's request. She received all of appellant's arguments, listened to all of appellant's witnesses who were compelling without a question on the transcript. They certainly come across that way. Heard from multiple witnesses on his behalf, considered an alternative PSI submitted by the appellant, and as counsel indicated, in a forensic mental health assessment that addressed multiple potential mitigating factors. The record is clear. Judge Olmstead did not merely focus on criminal history here. She reviewed all of those submissions, as she noted multiple times in the record, and acknowledged appellant's progress, his upbringing, and his remorse. And she acknowledged the circumstances of the offense which supported the durational departure. And in doing so, she exercised her discretion appropriately. Could she have granted a dispositional departure? Certainly, she could have. And that would have been a very difficult decision, appeal for the state, if the state would have tried to appeal that. That would have been difficult. But this is the breadth of the trial court's discretion here. She did what she is bound to do, which was to carefully consider the request. And having done so, this court should affirm the appellant's guideline sentence and durational departure here. And I'll stand for questions if there are any.
Thank you. Thank you,
Mr. Martin. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Vaccaro, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll be brief. I just want to reiterate that, as cited in the appellant's brief, the Riley case says that a court abuses its discretion when it goes against the facts and the logic that flows from the facts before the court. All of the facts before the court indicated that this was a tragedy. I think everyone in this room is in agreement with that. And it's a tragedy that involved a man who all of the facts indicated acted out once through one single punch. And the question is that does the injury sustained, the unintentional injury sustained, outweigh all of the work that Mr. Lax has done to bring himself into conformity with the law and to become a productive member of the community? Does it outweigh the reports from all the scientists and the people who've evaluated him that say that he is not a danger to the public and unlikely to do this again? And the answer is no. Mr. Lax is being punished for the unintentional consequences of his actions that he took responsibility for. But in this case, the logic and the weight of the facts lead, I would submit, to only one conclusion that makes sense here, that Mr. Lax is doing no good for himself nor good for any citizen of the state of Minnesota by serving time in prison, that where he belongs is out in the community, continuing that track record of rehabilitation and positive involvement that featured so heavily in the sentencing arguments and in all of the briefing that's been done at both the district court and the appellate levels. I don't think I have any more points to make for your honors unless you have any questions.
No, I don't think we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The matter was well argued, and we will carefully give our consideration to the appeal. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.
Please rise.